The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We will talk about a meme that has keep reoccurring. You know, when I'm posting food, I discover things about my crowd. First, every single food that I post triggers someone. And I thought the least and sometimes, you know, I troll, I put a salad, and then I put a Diet Pepsi beside it, because I know there's going to be people, oh, you're eating healthy with the salad, but then you're eating a Diet Pepsi. And I know that it will trigger them. But there are times where I really post just my meals for fun on Twitter. And I thought, for example, that there would never be controversial anything about wings. Chicken wings, carrots, celery, ranch sauce or Caesar sauce in that case, barbecue sauce. This is as basic as it gets. There are people who are offended by it. There are people who take issue with the carrots. And there is a crew on the internet. They came back at me on various meals. They are obsessively talking about vitamin A. And I wanted to get the clear word on this. I was like, this morning I woke up and I was like, am I going to join this anti-vitamin A, anti-carrot campaign? What is the case for it? People were kind enough. They sent me free ebooks in this community. They are really all about vitamin A. Vitamin A is wrong, and they wrote books about it. So I read the books and I looked at the evidence. And today I will take position on, are carrots dangerous? Before we jump into that main subject, a couple of news in our spheres. Mark Collett has been detained at an immigration center of Sweden. He was going to go with the Golden Boy to the Golden One to do a Free Sweden event where he would speak. He cannot even do this. An Englishman with no criminal history, an Englishman cannot travel to Sweden to talk about Free Sweden and talk about his perspective on the politics of immigration. It's absolutely scandalous what's happening with the misuse of immigration as a mechanism to deny white solidarity across the planet is a big problem. It's still going on. He says, I was scheduled to speak at the Free Sweden event this Saturday and flew into Stockholm earlier today. I was detained going through customs and held for several hours before being denied entry on the grounds that I present a threat to public order, the fabric of society, and the values on which Sweden and Europe are built. Well, if Mark Collett can No, there's a problem with your society. If a relatively thin man like Mark Collett represents a massive danger to it, like there may be something unstable about your society. If Mark Collett on his speech can just blow it away and completely destroy the fabric of it. You have no fabric of society if free speech can destroy it. Because that's a sign that you need to silence your own people. You need to silence what they want to hear, what they want to say, to keep your society together. That's a no-no. It's not going to last. I am now in the process of being deported. I am now in the, and the EU has banned from entering any Schengen zone country for 15 years. Remember, if I was a migrant that just arrived in a dinghy, I would have been housed, fed, and then the state would have turned a blind eye to any criminal activity I may have caused. Instead, I arrived in Sweden to give a speech encouraging white people to live together and form communities. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's extremely frustrating, but it is the state of the misuse of immigration these days by Europe. We've seen some events like this in Canada. The Golden Guy was refused in Canada. Same situation. He wanted to come to speak or be or just attend the conference. I don't know. Same thing. It's extremely sad. End of the line, Joel says, we need to stamp out this terrible anti-carrotism. Carrots are our greatest ally. Carrots were promised to us 3,000 years ago. Ruth Sternwood says, Dr. Paul Masson's lecture, Contra Fiber, on the low-carb Down Under channel is great and demolishes dietary orthodoxy. Rockin' Robin Hood says, vitamin A is good for hair and nails. I'll take position. I'll take a position today. I'll discuss the evidence first. I will take a position on the carrot question. Before that, absolutely shameful appearance of Candace Owens on Tucker Carlson talking about Nick Fuentes. It's like they can't help but bring it down to some high school human-based, oh, he's like this and he's like that and... oh, he's deranged, and oh, maybe he's lonely, maybe he's gay. It's like, why don't you just engage with his points? This guy, all that Nick Fuentes demands is that you engage with his points. And you're doing exactly the opposite. You look like the psyops to me. Like they're trying to frame Nick Fuentes as a psyop type of campaign to discredit non-crazy white people. First, Nick Fuentes has been in the business for less long than Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson has been in the business of media way before Nick. And yet Tucker Carlson's current content is inspired and aligned with Nick's position in a way that is hard to measure. Like, if you compare the Tucker Carlson of 20 years ago and the Tucker Carlson of today, what's the difference? I would argue that the difference is plus Nick Fuentes. That's the equation of the modern Tucker Carlson. Why is Tucker Carlson having success talking to people like Martyr Maid, approaching the Israeli question with gloves? Why is he having success publicizing alternative versions of history? Why is he having success challenging Ted Cruz on things relating to the Jewish question in Israel? And all of it is attributable to Nick Fuentes and to people like me. We changed the zeitgeist in a way that Tucker Carlson is today talking about things that he would have never talked about at the beginning of his media career. And this acknowledgement, they can't even do it. So what do they do instead? They continue the cancellation of Nick Fuentes instead of saying, hey, you know what? Much of our current work is inspired from this guy. Whether it's inspired directly because Tucker watches Nick Fuentes or whether it's through the sidelines of secondary causality, maybe Nick changes the world. The world comes to Tucker. Now the world has different expectations. Now they demand Israeli coverage of the Israeli question in a fair way. Whether it's through direct causality or indirect causality, it's unquestionable that Nick Fuentes, as a younger and rising star of the media world, has caused what Tucker Carlson is today. No question. So to see them talk with such dirtiness and such social concerns around Nick treating him like a psychiatric patient rather than treating him as a visionary who has inspired them is absolutely disgusting.
Who is this kid exactly?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just an accident that the guy exclusively goes after people who are in the same, roughly the same. And then he gets up there and he's like, you know, making Holocaust jokes. And it's like, is it possible that this is...
So Nick Fuentes' last Holocaust joke was like 5 years ago with Milo, with Milo pushing him to do it. Literally. I haven't heard a Holocaust joke from Nick in a while. I need my fix. The last joke of Nick Fuentes on the Holocaust was Milo brings a plate of cookies to him and he says, hey, how many cookies are there on this plate? And Nick answers, I know the answer you want me to give, 6 million. It's a nice joke. It's a hilarious joke. So to build a theory of Nick Fuentes based on an event that was caused by a Jew in the first place, that the Jew was demanding this joke from him, is absolutely out of context, and it's poor method journalistically. Now he's about to lay down a theory of Nick Fuentes based on the fact that he has this Holocaust joke.
Like David Duke, every time I had a new show, David Duke would endorse my show. I don't know, Dave, who the hell is David Duke? Well, David Duke is obviously part of a campaign to discredit people on the right.
No, not so obviously. Because you can read everything that David Duke has ever done as this guy has understood that there was illegitimate Jewish power in America that was working in the back of the scene, that was controlling too much for what they deserve, that was negatively affecting American politics. And you can understand everything that David Duke has ever done through this lens. You don't have an argument against this. You don't have evidence that David Duke is secretly planning something else, something nefarious for the American people. There is nothing that indicates this. First, you know, start by taking people from a good faith perspective and ask yourself, do I have anything against this? Do I have anything disproving the good faith of David Duke? You don't. So that's why you're making these attacks, baseless accusations here on a very popular show.
Obviously.
Mm.
No, not obviously.
And I think it's very obvious that Nick Fuentes is exactly the same.
Well, the harder you have to use the word obvious, the less obvious it seems to me. What is the evidence that Nick Fuentes is intended as a campaign to discredit the right? And who is discrediting Nick Fuentes? It's a bunch of leftists. It's the ADL. It's the SPLC. It's exactly everyone who handles the dirty work of cancel culture for the Jewish left and for the Jewish center to an extent. And because of people like you, this cancel culture finds a home in the center right. And that's very sad. Because you could say there's something wrong about everything that's being done to Nick Fuentes and to the likes of him. But you don't, because ultimately you are within the group of interests that is encompassed by SPLC, ADL. You are siding with them on this question, this critical question of, are we going to take Nick's argument for what they are, or are we going to treat him like a psychiatric patient?
Doesn't mean everything he says is false. It doesn't mean he's not talented. He's enormously talented. Doesn't mean he's a bad person. I'm not attacking him personally, but he is cool.
You are attacking him personally because you are implying a nefarious intent that is not in evidence. If you say, oh, well, I think he's part of a campaign to discredit us. Well, what kind of assumptions do you have to make to get there? You have to make the assumption that he's getting somehow paid, that maybe indirectly, or maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he's a useful idiot being hired by some agents that push him in that direction. you have to make the assumption of guilt by association, because you have to make the assumption that, oh, well, whatever he says will discredit my ideas because we have similar ideas. So you have to side with the left on guilt by association. You have to side with the aspect of cancel culture that absolutely relies on guilt by association to work at all. If we had intellectuals with balls in our world that would go out there and say, I will never side with guilt by association of any kind. If we had the world, if the world had rejected Sam Harris when he was counting the levels of separation between him and David Duke, and if people had laughed their ass off at the ridicule of the fallacy of guilt by association, we wouldn't be in the current situation. We wouldn't be with a Nick Fuentes isolated, whose ideas are not getting talked about because you spend so much time about his intention, around his intention. And yes, attribution of nefarious intention without evidence is a ad hominem. It is an attack of his character.
Clearly, part of a campaign to discredit non-crazy right voices.
So for this, you would have to prove first that Nick is crazy, or that he's acting out, he's playing a crazy character. I have no evidence that Nick is crazy. He's been extremely rational, being provoked and poked from all sides at all time, and being discredited, and people have attempted so hard to discredit him. He has continuously across the years pushed talking points that are rational, that are sensical, and that are intelligent. So where does the crazy come from? Not the fact that he has made one Holocaust jokes 5 years ago. Is that crazy? Is it crazy to find humor where you can't see it, Tucker Carlson? Is it okay in a liberal society that there are different types of minds that are triggered in their laughter through different mechanisms? And that some people, we are more edgy. We need a little more of that Nazi juice to our joke to find it really funny. That's not being crazy.
You know,
that's obvious to me. I've been around a long time. I know when I see it.
Yeah. And I will say, I don't understand it. We were very kind to him. Like, I truly, like, we almost said, like, we felt maybe he was a bit lonely. We should invite him back for dinner.
See, this is so disgusting. We felt he was maybe a little lonely, so we invited him back for dinner. We were... So when she did our interview, instead of having the grace to give an interview to Nick about his ideas and combat his arguments, which is what he's been demanding for a decade now, instead of doing that, well, we thought of inviting him back for dinner, you know, maybe he's a little lonely. So instead of treating him by the quality of his argument and engaging with him philosophically, you make this extremely poor interview in which you bring back talking points about race that were debunked years ago, and on top of it, you diminish him by treating him like he's a psychologically needing child, who perhaps is too isolated, so let's give him a special meal. Let's give him the Big Mac to buy him out, a little bit like those police interview where, okay, we're gonna give him a Big Mac and he's going to acknowledge his involvement in the murder.
I mean, that's how good of an experience I had.
It was
a 180. So it's either A, it's being driven from like a little boy insecurity, and he just was so worried.
Again, intentional attribution. Nick didn't get a quality engagement with his points on your show, Candace, because you came back with already debunked points about race. You failed at engaging above this in any way about the Israeli question, about the Frankist. You basically attacked him personally and brought everything down to the personal, and the personal view of race, of you and him, rather than the argument. And so, as such, he was legitimately disappointed by the treatment. there's no amount of dinner you can pay the guy that will fix that. And so he had to come out publicly once this interview was public. Unfortunately, you made yourself an enemy of epistemology, of proper epistemology, by making these discredited talking points and by not making Nick shine as much as he could have if you had concentrated on his points about Israel, Iran, the Jews, etc. You didn't live up to your responsibility as an interviewer. And your responsibility is, if you have a good product in front of you, you have to make it shine. That's your responsibility as an interviewer. And you brought it all down to female matters of, oh, well, do you think like that? Oh, well, I don't think like that. Well, I think that you think that.
And he, like, just went on the attack because he doesn't know how to have normal relations after being...
It's not about relations. See, these people are fucking... they're pissing me off. It's not about a relationship. You're not in a relationship with Nick Fuentes. It's about what you drop on the public space. It's about what he has to say in answer when you drop it. It's about the lack of quality of it. And so he has to come out and you know, to a disappointed crowd of his, he has to explain, no, look, she is a stupid bitch. It's not even a personal attack in this case to say she is a stupid bitch. It's just an explanation of why didn't you get a good interview that's worth anything with Nick Fuentes? And why is it that an average interviewer out there, like with these small YouTube channels, can do better than Candace Owens did with Nick Fuentes? It's not a relationship.
And everywhere.
Well, I think there's kind of that could be one element. The angry gay kid thing going on. Yeah.
And now Nick, he's the angry gay kid. That's what's going on. He's just an angry gay kid. He suffers from being gay. And he's angry and alone, and he needs to be pet dinner. Maybe if we gave him a second dinner, he would be kinder. It's like they don't understand anything. They don't understand that all that Nick would want is for his crowd to be satisfied that his points have been made. Not in a personal way, not in a she says, I think that way, but to be actually engaged with. Do you think that there is a... Do you think that there is a Jewish mafia that controls media too much, and that controls politics too much, and that controls intelligence too much in America, and that controls academia too much? Do you think that? If you could just engage on this question... this question isn't featured in this interview. How can you have Nick Fuentes for an hour in front of you and you can't talk about this? And you don't go like, hey, I disagree with you or I agree with you on this? How can that happen? Well, it happens because Candace Owens has a female relationship with the world. She talks about Nick Fuentes and she dares say the word relationship. Are you fucking kidding me? Relationship? There's no relationship. We are public persons. We can be in the same room at some point together or be in the same live stream. And that's it. That's the extent of our relationship. There's no kindness to be had. It's not about personal feelings. Nothing is personal, literally, in this business. Lana Loyalist says, crazy how you defend Nick, JF. The guy is such an obvious self-interested charlatan. He's not about anything but his own self-interest. He's been counting the left for over 2 years now. How do you not see this? Courting the left for over 2 years now. How do you not see this? Well, none of your arguments matter. I'm self-interested too. What are you going to do about it? The entire world is self-interested, my friend. you know, Lana Loyalist is a female stuck into a male body. This is one of the rare cases of a trans that hasn't trans. So you understand the world from, oh, well, he has self-interest, he's a charlatan. Well, I understand the world from this perspective. Everything has to be self-interested. And if it's not, it's eliminated by evolution. So you might, if you want something in the world, you better make sure that it's in the interest of someone. Because anything you want in the world will have to be carried by self-interest. If you want companies, they're going to have to pay their employees. And the employees are going to interact with this company by being self-interested, by making money so they can make babies or they can survive. If you want public speakers, you're going to have to find a way where public speaking is in the interest of someone. It can be hard, but it has to be attractive in some way. You will never get anything in society without self-interest. So to necessarily say someone is a charlatan because they are self-interested, absolutely false. Absolutely incorrect analysis. In fact, someone must have self-interest for things to continue and things to matter. Whether it's Walmart, everything, doctors, public speakers, anything you like in the world is grounded in self-interest. It's the only mechanism that makes the human species move forward. Secondly, to use the word charlatan, then, without the fact that self-interest can justify it, you would have to prove to me that Nick Fuentes is misguiding his audience significantly, or saying false things, or selling false IDs. None of this has been made. None of this case has been made by you. Nick Fuentes is pushing a view of politics. He's doing so in a very high resolution, high knowledge, high study way that very, very few people actually can meet. Very few people can equate Nick Fuentes and his preparation. And he's bringing something. He has chosen a subject, which is Jewish control of America, that is extremely relevant, and where he's one of the only ones doing it. So that's not a charlatan. That's someone contributing to a public point that you may or may not like. It may be in your or not in your interest, but it's still a very high quality work that's being made. And as long as there are people paying for it, then it's because they think that it's better to have this voice than not have it. So Nick Fuentes is legitimate independently of what you think of it. Lana Loyalist says, the problem with that argument is that he's purporting to be about some kind of broader movement, which is an obvious lie. You should obviously have a degree of self-interest, but that's not the point, and you're strawmanning. I'm not strawmanning. I have made the case that self-interest does not justify your charlatan label, and that you have nothing else to justify that label. Now, concerning the perpetrating of a movement, well, Nick Fuentes has been trying activism at various times. I don't blame him. Sometimes it works, sometimes it fails, but that is the inherent risk in doing something that's daring. You know, if you dare something that's unique and unsure, of course, there's going to be a chance for failure. As long as there are people willing to fund those failures and pardon him for those failures, like the Groypers War number 2 was kind of weak, there wasn't much to it, that doesn't matter. They're still throwing their money at something more useful than McDonald's. They're still throwing their money at something more useful than university research in our world. So the level of waste in the failure must take into consideration the fact that these people maybe don't care about the fact that sometimes it fails. It's unquestionable that sometimes it succeeds also. it's unquestionable that Nick Fuentes has had an impact on modern American thinking in a way that no one, literally no one of his generation is comparable. Name me one. Name me one that has changed Tucker Carlson as much as Nick Fuentes did. I don't know of a single person who has had impact on Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, in the way Nick Fuentes did. So it's like, he has cultural causality, no doubt. Now you can discuss about the chains of causality and whether they're complex or direct or indirect. But 10 years ago, I find myself in a world that's not willing to question Jewish power. Today, it's so much at the center of the public discussion that it's on Tucker Carlson's, literally. And they can't help but talk about it because they know it's the thing. They know it's the schism in the Republican Party. Now, your other argument is, well, Nick Fuentes is... he is a charlatan because he is flirting with the left. That is not what a charlatan does. Nick Fuentes' priors about the world are very clear. Nick Fuentes tells us he's kind of a social conservative, but not an extreme right-winger in the libertarian economic sense. In fact, to the contrary, arguably from my perspective, Nick Fuentes is a statist. And he is a leftist from my perspective, on the economic axis. Now, this is all disclosed. This is all known. Nick Fuentes has never sworn an oath of loyalty to the Republican Party. So Nick Fuentes is saying he has certain ideas and he's willing to play the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. To advance these ideas. And he's willing to say, I'm not voting for Trump today. I'm not voting for Kamala Harris either, but I'm not voting for Trump. And maybe there's a future in which Nick votes for the Democrat candidate. But that has always been a disclosed aspect of Nick's personality. He's willing to seek vengeance, and he understands the political game as, if you don't punish the side that you would have liked, but that is constantly demeaning you and rejecting you, then you have to side with the other side. And that's a very good argument. It's a very good argument that, in fact, by not voting Democrat, he has diluted his vote. He has diluted his resistance to the Republican Party. Arguably, the rational thing to do, if you're dissatisfied with how the Republican Party handles the Israeli question, the way to punish them for real is to not only not vote, it's to vote for the Democrat, even if you disagree with what the Democrats push for. So, no, I reject the entirety of the attack on Nick, and I conclude that Nick is still being canceled. Yesterday, I talked of three mechanisms of cancellation. One is to positively join the voices of cancellation, to lie and write hit pieces about someone. The second degree is to ignore someone in line with their already canceled state. The third degree is to engage with the person, but to boil it down to psychiatric and psychopathic accusations, to be treating the person as less than humans and his arguments as less than valuable because they come from his mouth. And Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson are in the third category. They are part of cancel culture. Because if you've been canceled by hit pieces and accusations, but then as a result of these hit pieces, people don't engage with your philosophical points, then you might as well be fully canceled. They might as well not engage. Because then they engage with, oh, the human, and oh, look at the human. Look at the monster here. And then your contribution to culture is zero. Because they're still obfuscating it. They're still gatekeeping it. Lana Loyalis says, he didn't say he wouldn't vote for Kamala. He was clearly shilling her and counter-signaling Trump, despite the Dems having the same position on Jews and Israel. He's not trustworthy, simple as. Well, then don't trust him. You are a meaningless person. A fan of literally Lana Del Rey. Okay? You are meaningless in the universe. You do not trust Nick Fuentes. Okay. I don't trust you. You don't. Do you trust me? Who cares who you trust? None of that matters. Mr. Wisco says he was not shilling for her at all. You have fallen for lies. Yeah. And he's been very clear that he wasn't voting for Kamala. This has been, he has stated to his base very often that he wasn't voting for Kamala. Now, even if he had said he voted for Kamala, that wouldn't matter. Lana Loyalis says we're all meaningless by that standard. Yeah, but you're especially meaningless. Like, whether you trust Nick Fuentes is especially meaningless. Especially meaningless. Doesn't matter. Go on with life. I like Nick Fuentes. I like his contributions to culture. And as long as there are people willing to trust him with their money, what you feel about it doesn't matter. What are the carrots for? So it all starts with this. It all starts with this meal that I posted. I love posting my meals. I thought there would be some interest for a kind of foodie blogger style of expose. But my expose, they constantly rise criticism, yelling at me, and people somehow food is a divisive subject. Now, when I posted that meal, I thought this is not going to be controversial at all. Wings, carrots, celery. Any restaurant you go, that's what they'll do. Barbecue sauce, Caesar dressing. I thought maybe some people will say, oh, it should be ranch, not Caesar. But I never thought that the carrots would be the item that shocks people in this picture. So people came at me, and it had been a couple of times where people said, hey, JF, the carrots, dangerous. And it's a couple of different Twitter accounts. So there is definitely a meme penetration going on on the internet that carrots are dangerous. And I had never heard of this. Anglo Becoming says, what are the carrots for? Have you looked into vitamin A toxicity? I said, no. And he said, it's interesting. Grant Ginnerer has written some free ebooks about it. If you search his name, he goes on podcast on YouTube sometimes. So I started consulting these books. So it's Extinguishing the Fires of Hell and Poisoning for Profit. So these books are supposed to make a case that vitamin A deficiency is behind a lot of suffering. It's not being properly understood that it causes these diseases. And that ultimately, it is the kind of assumptions around nutrition and daily nutrition requirements around vitamins are misleading people. And on top of it, the supplements that have these large quantities of these vitamins, they are misleading people toward a toxic lifestyle where they are eating too much vitamin A. That is the thesis of Extinguishing the Fires of Hell. I read it today, and I'm ready to take positions on carrots. My position is, this book is interesting. This book is interesting. It's not a strict science book. It's not a strict science argument. It's more like, hey, here, I'm a computer programmer. I'm an engineer, and I've been fascinated about vitamin A, and I've been digging through why do I have this eczema, and here's what I found about vitamin A, and it's pretty well done. The parts of this book that are the strongest are when we learn about the molecular mechanisms of vitamin A and what's this whole cycle of vitamin A. Because vitamin A is retinol. And to think of it as a vitamin rather than a pollutant is kind of misleading. And he makes a beautiful case that it's misleading. And this book takes you through the whole mechanism where vitamin A apparently is so dangerous that your body has mechanism, but it's also needed. So that's why it still qualifies as a vitamin. You need it. But your body has a way to handle it, because if it's free in its non-fat form in the plasma, diluted in water, it wrecks your body. So basically, vitamin A is essential. It must be deployed at specific places of the body, but it must be wrapped and carried with gloves when it circulates through your body, because wherever it intervenes at the site of destination when it's released, it triggers a immune reaction, and it's part of the whole immune system. So he makes a beautiful case about this, and it does highlight why you should be careful. You should be careful with vitamin A, because basically it boils down to this. You need vitamin A up to a point, but your liver is just capable of wrapping it in fat and storing it safely in the liver at a certain rate. Now, the liver has so much reserves of vitamin A that you're good to go with the current. If you are standing and alive, you have 1 year worth of vitamin A in your liver. And the problem is that the liver gets full. It gets filled with too much vitamin A. And in fact, one of the problem is the speed at which the liver succeeds at absorbing the vitamin A in a non-risky way. So that speed is slow. So what happens when your liver is either too stocked with vitamin A, or or the vitamin A is coming through your nutrition too quick in a way that the liver has difficulty ingesting and keeping it in? You end up with free vitamin A circulating in your blood, and that's where it gets dangerous. Now, one of the beautiful cases that he makes in extinguishing the fires of hell is that, you know, we even have an industrial cosmetic product that's vitamin A based. It's called vitamin A peels. And it's people, they apply literally vitamin A on a sticker on their skin. And what does that do? It kills all of the, it detaches all of the top layer of your skin, and it allows you to mutate into your new skin faster. And apparently it's something that's used by women for whatever, having fresher skin, killing the dead cells. Personally, I would never recommend this because, unless there's a medical reason for it, you don't want to undo the mechanism of nature. And maybe the mechanisms of nature involves having some dead cells around you to wrap your body. But in any case, it is sold as a product, these vitamin A peel, and it allows people from the outside of their body, the surface layer of your body, will shed these dead cells. So vitamin A, you realize through this example that he gives, is a very powerful agent that will literally chunk out pieces of your body. Now, the vitamin A peel comes on the outside, so at the surface, it doesn't do damage. And although some people suffer from inflammation from it, so apparently it's not that safe. but it makes you realize that vitamin A is a very dangerous and powerful agent. And now realize, what if vitamin A was from the inside rather than the outside? Then you would feel the fires of hell, the problem of autoimmune disease. So this book is the story of a guy who suffers from eczema, and he does some good research around around vitamin A, and I believe he makes a convincing case. He makes a convincing case that we should pay more attention to vitamin A. And someone asks, can it peel melanoma? Well, interesting. Perhaps there is a future medical application to this, where you surround the whole cancer with vitamin A. Who knows what happens? Maybe your whole body sheds it out. Maybe if it's in the skin, you could think of little robots or maybe surgical intervention that just injects vitamin A all around the cancerous portion, and it sheds it out. Totally possible that we could guide the immune system. And in fact, there is a lot of work in lab about guiding the immune system toward cancerous tumors. But anyway, so this guy describes the pain. At the end of the book, he has a personal journal of his journey and how, you know, it starts with eczema and you have flaky skin on the face, flaky skin on the hands. But then there are cognitive effects. Then you feel completely lost. Then you are in a depression. There's all sorts of... And your nails are cracking. So eczema starts with sometimes a small diagnosis of just pain on the skin somewhere, but it kind of feels like a whole body disruption as a whole. So, but there is still weaknesses in this book. And the weaknesses are when he tries to take his ideas. So the ideas I've talked up to now are the strongest ideas of the book. Vitamin A is understudied. The fact that it has a one-year cycle of storage messes up our science of it because people don't realize the causality. Like, you could have a reserve of vitamin A in your liver for a whole year, and you're not eating much vitamin A, and then you start eating vitamin A, and perhaps your liver wasn't full, so your liver is capable of ingesting it at first, but then you get on a regular routine, and then months down the line, maybe you realize, oh, now I've reached a point at which my liver, you don't realize, in fact, that your liver reaches the point where it cannot take anymore. And now you start suffering months down the line from a decision you've made 6 months before of going on fish oil or of eating more carrots or eating more that. Or doing them all at the same time. You know how sometimes we say, oh, I want to switch to a more healthy lifestyle. You start eating salad with tomatoes, with carrots. You start taking fish oil supplements. You start taking whatever supplement with vitamin A. Now you've just overloaded your vitamin A capability of your liver very hard. But you may pay the price for it down the line. Because at first, your liver may have enough place to store all of this. 6 months down the line, it may not. So this conception that we have to have a nutrition daily dose of things is misguiding. And I think one of the things that's not discussed in this book is ultimately how all of this could be resolved by seasonal eating in the way our ancestors did. I know that I will never get vitamin A toxicity because I eat carrots. Okay, I eat carrots 2 months of the year as a Canadian, and then I don't eat carrots at all. Because I only buy carrots when they are farmed locally, when they are the product of our farmers. And I don't buy the carrots that are delivered from California or Mexico in the winter. I only buy carrots when they are really, really low price. So I know that I will never suffer from anything described in this book. Because there is something that is protective with the idea of seasonality and cyclicity, which is if modern life, as this book makes the thesis for, if modern life has led us to maintain daily intake of toxic materials that our bodies are not prepared for, the simple fact of eating things in 2 months portions, like my nutrition is extremely varied across the year. Sometimes I will go beef and it's like, now I'm on beef. Sometimes I'm pickle oriented and I eat pickles and pickles of all kinds, cucumbers, onions. And then the summer comes and now I'm seeing the radishes and the carrots are cheap at the grocery store. I buy bags of carrots and radishes. There's never really a point in my life where I constantly eat the same thing always. And that may be a big problem of modernity. You know, this guy identifies correlations between something happened in the 50s to the 70s that started increasing all sorts of disorders. Now, this is the weakest part of the book. It's where he starts saying, oh, look, Alzheimer starts around 50s and 60s and goes up and up, and we now have 4 times more Alzheimer than we had in the 80s and much more times than we had in the 60s. The diabetes diagnosis in the 80s, something goes wrong, starts increasing. Autoimmune disease starts increasing. Children with autism starts increasing. And this is where the case becomes weaker and weaker. Because there is not a proper scientific processing of these questions in the book. You have to understand, this guy is an engineer, so he doesn't understand epidemiology. You have to understand what can fool you in epidemiology. And some of the things that can fool you is there can be a diagnosis crisis. You know, we weren't diagnosing these things extremely seriously in the 30s. Now, you may say, no, I looked at a book of medicine and they were talking about Alzheimer's in the 30s. It's a very different thing between medicine knew about Alzheimer's and everyone in your society gets diagnosed with Alzheimer's who has it. This the process between this and that takes about 100 years. It takes about 100 years before, hey, we know about Alzheimer's because some guy wrote it in some medical textbook. And down the line to we diagnose everyone who has Alzheimer's, and in fact, we diagnose them in advance before they even suffer from all the symptoms. This takes many, many years. And so when you see curves of, oh, we have so much more of this, we have so much more of that. People were dying without a doctor not so long ago. And they were dying in ways that no one would care what they really had. They were just dead. And Frahaz sends a super chat. He says, plus il se fait tard, plus le vin est sucré. Plus il se fait tard, plus la nuit est sucrée. À la fenêtre, la lune est restée collée. People are sending us poetry, fucking poetry. Well, I'm having difficulty loading it. I don't know if it's an internet cutout of some sort. I'm gonna let it load and I'll have to see what this YouTube link was giving. But thanks for your poem and thanks for your donation, and Frahaz. I hate having a loading tab on my computer. Why is it that I'm live and that I can't load a tab? What happens? Well, what is the DNS issue here? This is a YouTube link. For now, I can't load your link, so I don't know. When it pops in, I will check. So where the case becomes extremely weak is that he starts, okay, I have all this knowledge about vitamin A. He made a beautiful case that vitamin A toxicity has escaped the attention of science. It's happening on a too long range of time. People don't know the causality. They don't remember what they ate, what they were eating 1 year ago, what they were eating 6 months ago. And so they can't make the link between, oh, it's because I've been switching to this carrot diet and this fish oil, and together it gives me too much vitamin A. And he makes a beautiful case that autoimmune disorders could stem from, some autoimmune disorders could stem from this vitamin A toxicity. But where it gets extremely loose and is when he says, well, and I've looked at Alzheimer's, and they have cracked nails too, and they have something happening to their skin, and so maybe it's vitamin A too. So have I gotten disconnected? Stream has disconnected. Let's see if we can reconnect. Okay. So we are now reconnected. Sorry, guys. I had the internet shut off for a moment. We are now back. And so we have Infraraz, who had sent us Cucaracha.
Danser en rond me lève le cœur.
I'm getting tired about this fucking female music, okay? I'm getting fucking tired.
I'm flying in the wind. I speak French, so it's kind of sexy. I'm kind of fucked up.
Fuck this music of females. I'm done with it. This fucking, wheat field, vagabond crap. Fuck it. Fuck Lana Del Rey. Fuck Joran. Fuck this music. It's not artful. It's not intelligent. It's vagabond music of the worst fucking kind. Please, woman, do these musics and keep it for yourselves. Stop publishing. I'm tired of this. I'm really tired of this. But thank you, Infraraz, for your donation. Rodita Sid says, so the moral of the story is eat carrots or you too will get banned. Big carrots may have been censoring me. Maybe that's why my internet went off. So yeah, the weak parts of this book is about where he starts to take his vitamin A knowledge and applies it to, oh, well, maybe it's what's under Alzheimer's. Maybe it's what underlies autism. Maybe it's what underlies Crohn's disease. And even on the main claim that this underlies Crohn's disease and eczema, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. There is a way you could convince me, but that is not it. Because the precautions haven't been taken about studying the differential diagnosis culture. So he goes into Asia and he shows, oh, look, they don't suffer from this in Asia. And oh, look, in poor sections of the US, they don't suffer from this. And oh, look, if you have more money, you have more chance of having these diseases. And oh, look, Finland versus Sweden. Sweden has it, Finland doesn't have it. All of this is interesting, but does it tell me anything about vitamin A toxicity? No. It tells me, okay, there are wide societal differences in everything. In everything that people eat, in the way they go see doctors. And yeah, poor people don't go see doctors at the same rate as rich people. And developed societies don't go see doctors at the same rate as undeveloped societies. And Asian societies don't go see doctors, don't care about going seeing doctors as much as we do. And so I'm in front of all these correlations and countrywide comparisons. And I'm like, this has not been properly studied to affirm a link to the diseases that we're talking about. And it hasn't been tied to vitamin A deficiency or vitamin A toxicity, vitamin A over toxicity, in a way that's satisfying to me. So it's a good book on certain aspects. I think the guy is fascinated with vitamin A, but I think it's a book where you have to make your best case. And sometimes your best case includes not saying certain things that are more wild on the side. But this guy can't help it. He has to say everything, the wildest possible theory. The idea that Alzheimer's isn't even a thing. So he works, you can see it in his logic that he applies at times. For example, he says, I will not attribute to Alzheimer's to any novel product that has been invented in the 20th century because there were some Alzheimer's in the 19th century. So it has to be carrots. You know, this kind of logic, I'm exaggerating it here, but he almost says this. But it's like, maybe there was some Alzheimer's in the 19th century. And maybe now it's caused by a novel agent. And it's not because something existed before that it cannot be caused by novel agents. The way he dismisses genes also is absolutely irrational. He says, this is an environmental disease. I think I've made the case very, very clear. Well, no. Because all of these correlations are across countries that you include in your book, they all include different genes. Countries evolve at different rates and they take different evolutionary directions. And you don't necessarily evolve not to have Alzheimer's. You don't necessarily evolve not to have Crohn's disease or eczema, but you evolve certainly to the point where these diseases are not disrupting your reproductive period of your life. So it makes total sense that at 60 years old, people die of Alzheimer's. You can't evolve against this because you've already made your babies. If you've already made your babies and they're good to go, evolution has no pity for you. But there could be genes that are evolving in certain of these countries to protect the grandparent contribution to the grandchildren. So maybe in certain culture, grandparents are important. Maybe they're not in other culture. So maybe genes evolve to protect you from Alzheimer in one culture, but not to protect you from Alzheimer in another culture. Because in one culture, it matters to the survival of the babies. In one, others, it doesn't. And so the way he says, it's not genetic because I've proven it's the environment. Well, the environment will always interact with genes. And genes will always offer a door for evolution if it's disrupting your reproductive life. So Crohn's disease, eczema are disrupting enough of the young people's body that they could have an adverse effect on reproduction. They could lead not to engage in dating. I know some people who came to me and they said, I have this inflammation syndrome, so I don't want to date. And it's like... And Yann Rushdie actually yesterday did an argument in French to me along this way. So yes, they have evolutionary consequences and therefore genes will evolve to avoid these diseases in ways that perhaps give a protective effect. What if you can have a bigger liver? Like I have a huge liver, I'm sure, because I've been drinking beer and I've been tasting so much things culinarily across my life. I know I must have a very big liver, but it's also a feature of all these societies that have alcohol. They have a stronger liver to handle it. And there are societies that there are genomes that are completely they are completely bothered by alcohol. They don't have the liver to handle it, and so one beer will get them drunk. One beer doesn't get me drunk, doesn't get my ancestor drunk, because we have huge livers. We come from societies that produced a lot of beer, and we train ourselves to drink that beer as young men in certain quantities. Big Time Ape says, doesn't even make sense to say that the genes are separate from the environment. I'm not even convinced that there is any sort of real mathematical statistical way to separate their influence. That is usually the wisdom that I push for. I say genes and environment is a false dichotomy. Nature versus nurture is a false dichotomy, and it has to be rejected. Anyone who tells you, oh, it's 10% gene, 90% environment, is they're lying. They don't fully understand what percentages mean. They don't fully understand multiple causality. And ultimately, there's not a thing in your life that's not genetic. And the way I explain this usually is because if I had replaced all of the genes in your zygote at the moment of conception with squirrel genes, you'd be a squirrel. And you wouldn't have listened to the Canadian nutritionist guide that told you to eat carrots, and you wouldn't have vitamin A deficiency, vitamin A toxicity. So that's my way of explaining that, yes, everything boils down to your human genes, and everything that you attach importance to in your life comes from your genes. So yeah, that is my conclusion of the book. It's too bad. A very good mechanistic book about vitamin A, and I learned a lot of stuff. I didn't know these things about vitamin A. I didn't know that retinol is dangerous on its own, but that being handled by the liver, it allows a buffer. That's a buffered system. It's very interesting. I didn't know that we have this 1 year reserve of vitamin A in our body. But then I look at my personal life in light of this book, and it makes total sense. I consider myself healthy. I haven't suffered from these very strong, immune autoimmune disease, and perhaps it has something to do with the way I'm carelessly switching seasonally, anarchically switching diets all the time in my life. Sometimes I'll be drinking red wine for a month, and then I'll stop. And then I'll be eating cheese, and I stop. And then I'm eating carrots, and then I stop. And then I'm... But another point that's weak with this book is how he made an experiment on himself, and he said, I will try a zero vitamin A diet. And it turned out to be great for his eczema. But the way he went about to do a zero vitamin A diet is to go for beef and rice, whereas before he was eating all these colorful vegetables and all. When you do that switch, it's much more than vitamin A. There's lots of physiological differences. Like, it's really not comparable. So this guy has poor isolation capabilities. He doesn't seem to understand, and he admits to a point. He says, I'm not a scientist. So he says, so he doesn't have the capacity to interest that, to understand the complexity of the experiments that he's suggesting. And these experiments are ultimately poorly done. Now, I'm happy that he found a diet where he feels good. But this diet being beef and rice as opposed to lettuce and carrots and tomatoes, those are massively different intakes. There may be something in beef that makes you feel better, and it's not vitamin A absence. Big Time Ape says, only retinol produces toxicity. Beta-carotene is converted as needed. Take beta-carotene, not retinol supplement. So yeah, I would say overall, it's an overreaching book. It reaches conclusions that are way too far in epidemiology. based on mechanisms that are well described. And so it's an interesting book, but it's not a book where I can side with the conclusion in full. Now, one thing I learned in this book, because my grandfather died from Alzheimer's, one thing I learned in this book is there is a Korean study indicating that taurine is protective against Alzheimer's. And I was so happy because what is it that I was drinking on the show yesterday? Was it yesterday or 2 days ago? I was drinking my Monster drink. Monster drink supplemented with taurine. So I didn't know that taurine had a protective effect on Alzheimer's. I will continue drinking the Monster drink because that is fresh knowledge that I didn't know at all about. And yeah, it does seem that taurine is some kind of amino acid nutrient that is necessary in the protein production. Rodita Sid says, Jeff, how many times has the dietary scientist changed their minds on things that were bad one day, good the next, then bad again? You're asking a question of history of nutrition. I don't know much about it. What seems to me to be the problem is that we are making these guides for everyday eating. Daily intake. Daily intake, when I think of nature as an anarchist, as an anarcho-primitivist, and I'm like, I try to live in the way my ancestors lived. Not my ancestor like my grandfather. My ancestors like the million of years before me. The million and billions of ancestors that have existed in the last million years. That is what I'm aiming for. And certainly they didn't have daily intake. Certainly daily intake was an unnatural concept to their brain, for sure. They were hunting deer, and when they were successful, they got a lot of food. And then they had very little food. And then they were using strategies to preserve food. They had pickles. They had whatever. They had various strategies to keep food going. And so I'm eating very much like this. I'm eating in a way where my feelings are driving me toward these modes where, oh, I'm in pizza mode. Okay, I love pizza. This week I've eaten 2 pizzas. But then there are old sections of the year where I will not touch a pizza. And sometimes I'll go very beef and I'll be like, okay, we have a reserve of frozen beef. We have to pass through it. Let's go. That is probably the best way to eat. And even if you can include some degree of fasting, probably very good for you also. Rodita Sid says, so intermittent fasting was probably a normal way of life. Absolutely. Which is why today people, you know, they seek all of the explanations of the science behind why is fasting good? And they conclude that, oh, it's because your body gets in an autodigestion mode. It gets rid of the bad cells in the process, kind of digests them to extract their nutrient. And it's like, yeah, but also it's probably how we evolved. So our bodies always were on the assumption that you're going to get rid of your cells because you can't have deer every day. You're not going to have deer every day. You're not going to have carrots every day. It's going to be one moment in the year. You eat it and then you're done. And then you switch to something else. So I would say live like this. Absolutely. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, imagine such a device screening for alleles during sex, but humans choose their own alleles and keeping reproduction otherwise natural. Is this the path forward? So you are saying in the shake-up, in the random shake-up of will a sperm that carries this allele or that allele make it into my children? What if I could control that random? What if I could decide I'm going to inseminate with a sperm that has my chromosome 1 of my father, chromosome 2 of my father, chromosome 3 of my mother, chromosome 4 of my father? Is that what you're suggesting? Is that what you're asking? I would say is this the future? It's probably something that they will attempt. It's probably something that will have more ease to do as we become experts at characterizing and controlling in vitro reproduction. We're not fully there yet because I think it's not easy to do. You have the problem that you have to destroy the sperm to do the genetic testing on it. But perhaps we will develop tools to light up, send us light signals from inside the cells that will say, hey, this sperm lights green. So this sperm has, say, chromosome 2 from the father. This sperm likes red, so it has chromosome 2 from the mother. We could develop tricks like this that are non-destructive. It's very undesirable, though. If we ever do this, because the reason you would do this through science and medicine is because one of the parents is known to have an allele that is genetically defective or carries a recessive disorder, and say you know that the other parent also has this allele. So you want to select the sperm that doesn't carry this disease. Now, it might have functions in these very specific scenarios. What we would do these days, instead of doing it pre-insemination, we would do it at the embryo level. They would, of course, there are people who have religious objections to this, but they would farm 8-10 embryos, and they would just choose the one that happens to have had the good sperm and the good eggs. That is the current way to do this. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, imagine such a device screening for alleles during sex. It would be a non-destructive sperm screening for specific alleles using fluorescence-based method. Ah, okay, so there you go. You are mentioning exactly what I was talking about, fluorescence light, which approach holds the most practical promise. Yeah, I think something like this, what you would have is you would have to have, many light channels. It wouldn't be just green and red. Or perhaps if you're trying to control for just one genetic disorder, a specific one, you could have red and green. And so the laboratory scientists would be able to pick up the sperms that are green, that are known not to have this. Right now, we are doing it with embryos, and we're giving the opportunity. Okay, I generated 8 embryos. 4 of them maybe have the recessive disorder. 4 of them don't have it. So which one do you want to put in your uterus? That's the current way of doing. If it became easier and less costly, I see a grave danger. You shouldn't be choosing your genes that way. You shouldn't be depriving yourself of the true randomness of the sexual lottery, because the sexual lottery is so much more important than anything you might think about what's important for your children. The sexual lottery is the mechanism by which you can make 8 children and be confident in life that, yeah, maybe one of them will go on fentanyl addiction. Maybe one of them will be too liberal and not have babies. Maybe one of them will be pursuing their career too hard and not have babies. But the remaining 5 will be different enough that they will make up, and you will have a line of descent continuing. So that is a very important aspect of sexual diversity. And it's induced by the randomness of that genetic lottery. So a lot of people, they can focus on, I'm fixing this medical problem. But they are unable to think, what have you deprived yourselves of by fixing this medical problem? So suppose that you had a small medical issue controlled through this genetic technique. But maybe this gene was there for a reason. Maybe there were trade-offs. Maybe that gene, if you force this allele rather than that allele, maybe you just force your entire line of descent to be extremely sensitive to one thing in the environment. let's say, universities. So let's say you got rid of one chromosome and you decide all of my children, I'm all going to make them with this chromosome. But what if this chromosome makes you a career person that won't ever have babies if you're a female? And what if this chromosome makes you a fentanyl addict if you're a male? Then you have no line of decent remaining. So never forget what you deprive yourself of when you deny nature, when you abandon randomness, when you choose rather than not choose. And the beauty of the world to me is how great it gets when you don't choose. Let things happen, the laissez-faire attitude. This is the great mechanism behind capitalism, behind the productivity of our nations, behind everything natural selection, life, species. Everything relies on not choosing. Now, the day humanity will start choosing is a dark day for us. Big Time says, or what if it makes you susceptible to something like a strain of COVID-19? There were a couple of instances of COVID-19 killing of the entire family. Well, you know, yes. But most likely, what I'm most worried about is, what if this chromosome makes you a mask cuck? What if this chromosome leads you to immediately want the state to inject you with 5 booster shots of an untested vaccine? Now that's dangerous. Much love. I'm going on a vacation for the weekend. I'll be back on Monday. If you'd like to support the show, go to our Patreon, go to our Subscribestar, and give us a little amount every month. The show needs your support to keep going. Bye-bye, everyone.